Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. God save England and the UK.
Good evening and welcome back to the English Defence League radio show, broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio. Been a while, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, we are back with great slides and a great script as usual. The banner of the script this evening is English Defence League radio show, Clashes and Bashes. There you go, Clashes and Bashes. Welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell, and my wingman is Dangerous Dave Milner. Tonight we will welcome back independent journalist and friend of the podcast, Mr. Carmel Melamed, who will provide eye-opening information on the current uprising in Iran. Other topics of interest will be covered as we catch up on, up from our long break, No Surrender Ever. And I'm just going to do this before I continue on. Just bear with me. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. And of course, that was by the late, great Edmund Burke, who seems to be vilified at the moment by the leftists doing their thing, trying to besmirch his name. So it proves what a sick time we live in. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And that's so prominent at the moment in Iran. President John F. Kennedy said that. Without further ado, let me bring on Dave after our long break. So I think we might have our friend and colleague, Mr. Carmel Melamed, might be sitting waiting to come on to the show. So let me pass it to Dave. Welcome back, Dave, after this long break, and I hope everything's sorted out at your end now. I notice it was a bit of an upheaval for you, wasn't it, sir?
Yes, it was, Jeff, and welcome back to you, and welcome back to all of our listeners from across the planet, and of course, hey, off Earth. All right, yeah, guys, it was a big move for me, not a lot of help from others, so I had to do a lot of stuff myself. And it's not over yet, but got enough stuff done to where we're able to get into the show and do the show. And what a show we have got for you guys right out of the gate. This is one you're going to want to pass around because you're going to get perspective here that you're not going to get from MSNBC or CNN or the BBC or any of these other fake stream media news outlets, because we do have a fantastic guest, Mr. Carmel Melamed, who is with us today, and he's going to provide some perspective. And Jeff, if you want to make sure that this is Mr. Melamed, then we'll bring him in and welcome him, and then we're going to run a story about Iran, and we'll bring Mr. Melamed in for his commentary. And guys, again, this will be commentary that will not be something that you will hear on these larger news outlets. So this is definitely a show you're going to want to share around. And yes, guys, it's been a month, as some of my friends say, it's been a minute. But we have been thinking about you guys. Yeah, sure. We had some great archive shows. And now let's welcome in Mr. Carmel Melamed. Jeff, if you want to bring in Mr. Melamed, then we'll welcome him.
Yeah, I just had a quick chat with him in the green room. Mr. Carmel Melamed, so good to have you back. There's so much we want to discuss tonight with what's been going on in Iran. So welcome back to the radio show. I hope you're keeping well, my friend.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to join you back on the show. I'm so glad the show is back on, and you guys are sharing information with the public that they're not getting from mainstream media.
No, that's true.
Welcome, Carmel. Welcome. Yes, we're very happy to see you back on the show.
Yes. Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Well, no, I'm just adding to your voice there, Jeff. Carmel, you're always a fount of information. Just to give people some background on you who haven't heard you before, let people know. I've called you an independent journalist in our script, but kind of let people know where they can find some of the things that you've written and things of that nature, sir.
I am a freelance Iranian-American journalist. I write for different publications. In the past, I've written for the Jerusalem Post, the Times of Israel, the LA Jewish Journal, the Jewish Wire News Service, a whole host of publications in the U.S. and in the Middle East. My focus typically is on Iran, Israel, and Middle East affairs, and an extra focus on some of the crimes that the regime commits against various groups in Iran, including women, children, artists, religious minorities, and student protesters.
Well, that's terrific. And what we're going to do now, Carmel, as I told you in email, is we're going to run a Breitbart story to kind of get some people up to speed on the just generally what's going on in Iran. And once we're done with that, that story will take about six-ish minutes. Then once we're done with that, we'll bring you back in for further commentary, if that's agreeable to you, sir.
Fantastic.
All right. And before we do that, Jeff, I know you always like to check the chat to see if there's anyone in there. Do we have anyone in chat right now? We may not because
we've been gone a month. We certainly have. We've got two of our friends of the show, Duck Northwest Mead, and of course Bigfoot, and they're both saying good English Space League Radio. Yeah, that's Duck Northwest Mead. Good to have you back again. It's good to be back, Duck Northwest, and he's saying hi to Bigfoot, Bigfoot saying hi Jeff and Agador. So there you go. We've got two of our friends back. We've missed you too, guys. We've missed you too. So there you go. I just want to let you know, Dave. And there you go. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. And Bigfoot runs a blog called Bigfoot's Place at blogspot.com or bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. I want to welcome you, Bigfoot, and welcome Duck Northwest Media. If you want to get into the chat, we podcast here live Sundays at 8:30 p.m. in the U.K., and that's 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the United States. Just go to blogtalkradio.com and look for the White Top Center search box. Type in EDL Radio or English Defense League Radio, and that will eventually lead you to our live page. Once you get there, if you're registered with Blog Talk Radio, you too can be in the chat. So now, gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and run this Breitbart story. This is going to take just over 6 minutes, and then we'll bring our guest Carmel back in for further commentary. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. Here we go.
Iran, death toll mounts. International outrage grows on day 10 of Hijab Uprising, by John Hayward on September 26, 2022. Protests continued across Iran on Sunday night despite promises by the regime to deal decisively with those who oppose the country's security and tranquility and take decisive action without leniency. Those warnings came from Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi on Saturday and Judiciary Chief Ghulam Hossein Mosheniyeh on Sunday, respectively. The Opposition National Council of Resistance of Iran, NCRI, said protests continued despite the security forces' onslaught and brutal repression, with marches in major cities across the country, including the capital city of Tehran. On the evening of September 25, in Tehran, at least in 10 districts, including Narmak, Sadiqiyeh, Haftaz, Ekbatan, Sattar Khan, and Shariati Highway, rebellious youths confronted a large number of Revolutionary Guards and forced them to flee. Demonstrators chanted, "Death to Khamenei, death to the dictator. Death to Basiji, have no fear, we are all together. Noble Iranians, support, support, and we will fight, we will die, and we will take back Iran." In Shariati Street in Tehran, a large propaganda billboard of the regime and a motorcycle of the repressive forces were set on fire by the rebellious youths. In Narmak, the rebellious youth set fire to two motorbikes and a vehicle of the repressive forces. In Punak, Pardis, and Ekbatan districts, people continued to protest despite the heavy presence of the repressive forces. In Tehran, the students at the University of Tehran protested on campus and chanted, "We will fight, we will die, and we will take back Iran." In Sattar Khan, the demonstrators chant, "I will kill whoever killed my sister." In Tabriz, in their night demonstrations, the rebellious youth chanted, "No to Shah, no to Mullahs, people, people." To prevent demonstrations in Karaj, the regime's agents cut off the electricity in many areas of the city, but the youths continued their protests. Death to Khamenei refers to the theocratic supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The Basij is a brutal militia controlled by the theocratic wing of the Iranian military, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC. It is frequently deployed to violently suppress protests and other perceived threats to the regime. The chant of "I will kill whoever killed my sister" refers to the cause of the current uprising, the killing of a young Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini by Iran's thuggish morality police because she was not wearing her headscarf properly. The number of people killed in the protests after 10 days is difficult to determine, in part because the regime has been shutting down internet service in a bid to prevent dissidents from organizing. The official death toll stands at 41, but international human rights groups believe the total is much higher. A growing number of foreign governments and organizations are denouncing Iran's crackdown on protesters, most recently including European Union, EU, Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell, who on Sunday called on Iran to halt its unjustifiable and unacceptable use of force against demonstrators, restore the free flow of information, and thoroughly investigate the death of Mahsa Amini. Furthermore, we expect Iran to clarify the number of deaths and arrested, release all nonviolent protesters, and provide due process to all detainees, Borrell said. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced sanctions on those responsible for the death of Amini on Monday. The U.S. Treasury Department imposed similar sanctions on Thursday. "We've seen Iran disregarding human rights time and time again. Now we see it with the death of Mahsa Amini and the crackdown on protests," Trudeau said. The Iranian regime retorted angrily on Monday that Western powers are supporting rioters and orchestrating protests in a bid to destabilize the Islamic Republic. "Washington is always trying to weaken Iran's stability and security, although it has been unsuccessful," complained Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani. Iran on Sunday summoned the British ambassador to complain about the hostile character of coverage of the protests from Persian language media headquartered in London. The British Foreign Ministry defended media freedom and condemned Iran's crackdown on protesters, journalists, and internet freedom. Iran also summoned the Norwegian ambassador to complain about the interventionist stance taken by the Iranian-born speaker of the Norwegian parliament, Masud Arhani. "If my parents had not made the choice to flee in 1987, I would have been one of those fighting in the streets with my life on the line," Garahani said on Sunday. Protests spread around the world over the weekend, with violence erupting in the streets outside the Iranian embassy in London on Sunday. Another protest march on the Iranian embassy in Paris was met by police in riot gear. Amnesty International, AI, on Saturday said it has compiled evidence of a harrowing pattern of Iranian security forces deliberately and unlawfully firing live ammunition at protesters, including photos and videos showing deceased victims with horrifying wounds in their heads, chests, and stomachs. UN member states must go beyond toothless statements, hear the cries for justice from victims and human rights defenders in Iran, and urgently set up an independent UN investigative mechanism, urged AI Middle East and North Africa Director Hiba Morayef. On Monday, Comma Press reported one of the demonstrators killed in the crackdown was 20-year-old Hadis Najafi, who captured international attention last week by confronting police with her hair completely uncovered. Comma Press quoted Iranian journalists who said Najafi was killed last Wednesday by attempting to join a protest in the provincial capital of Karaj. Although she was shot several times in the face and neck by Iranian security forces, leaving her face severely disfigured, her father was instructed by the authorities to say she died of natural causes as a condition of claiming her body.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Men's League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. And unfortunately, we've lost our guest. For some reason, his line went dead. But we're hoping to have Carmel back with us as soon as possible. Jeff, your comments on this story so far?
Well, it's pretty powerful stuff, Dave. And, you know, all I can say is I salute those that stand and fight against the evil, oppressive tyrants of Iran. And they're doing that with shedding their own blood to do it, like that young woman did. It's tragic. Have we seen it before? It's nothing new. Do they care about public opinion? The Iranians, they never have done and never will. This is probably about the fourth uprising. It does seem to be more intense this time. It's quite obvious that they're very concerned because they're calling the ambassador to the UK. It's quite obvious that they're absolutely pissed off with what's going on. But that's what happens when you oppress people. People, all sorts of people who just remember or their parents told them how it was, want to get back to some sort of stability, and they absolutely deplore these tyrants that pushed their way in. In 78, when it died, 77, 78, when it pushed their way in, which it was a very westernized country back in the times, wasn't it? People enjoyed that good lives. When the Shah was still in power, they all had good lives. It was a very prosperous nation. And I think we have Carmel back now. I was just hanging about a little bit. Let me bring him back on. Carmel, I just see you've come back in.
I got disconnected. I'm sorry.
No, that's no problem. I just wanted to welcome you back. And I hope you heard enough of what David played. I was just talking about the oppressiveness, and people stood up to it and actually shed their blood. And I'm very proud of people that do that. Always have done. It's an uprising. It's right. It's still going, isn't it? But let me pass it back to Dave, and then we can get back into the whole thing of what's actually been going on, the progression of it. So, Dave, can I pass it back to you, and then you can talk to Carmel, and then we can gather the forces together.
All right, Jeff. Yes. Well, Carmel, you obviously know what's been going on, and the story that we ran was just to get people up to speed who have either been haven't heard about this at all, or have gotten only, propagandized versions from the large media outlets. Please, sir, give us your perspective on all this.
I wouldn't call what's happening in Iran as uprisings. You basically have on your hands a full-blown revolution. The mainstream media, unfortunately, in the United States, Europe, and the free world has very, very limited coverage, if no coverage, of what's going on. I've been in contact with fellow journalists, activists in Iran on social media through email, and I regularly get their videos and information. These are not just discontent Iranians that are protesting. This is a full-blown revolution throughout the country, in almost every major city, town, village. The people have had enough of the regime. The young girl that was killed by the regime, that was kind of the spark that led to this full-blown revolt. And people are really in the streets demanding for the overthrow of the regime. They've had enough of it. They've had enough of the repression. They've had enough of the lack of freedoms, lack of opportunities, the regime pouring billions of petrodollars, money from the country's wealth, from the country's resources into terrorist groups and terrorism, supporting terrorist groups in Syria and the Palestinian areas, Yemen, Lebanon, elsewhere. And they've said basically enough's enough. We're done with this regime, and we're going to do everything in our power to bring it down. Surprisingly, a lot of people don't realize, but these protesters, the vast majority of them are young people. And by young people, I mean age 18 to 25. They know nothing about the Shah. They know nothing about what happened 40 years ago in Iran with that revolution. These are young people that are tired. They've had enough of this brutal, repressive regime that offers them nothing but destruction and a very, very difficult life moving forward. And they're willing to put their lives in harm's way. They're unarmed. They don't have any central leader. There really isn't any kind of organization, but they are huge in number. The West, unfortunately, and the U.S. Have failed to recognize these young Iranians and these protesters over the years. And this revolution, full-blown revolution, has not just been a surprise to the Ayatollahs. It hasn't just blown up in their faces. It's blown up in the faces of the West that failed to recognize this brewing trouble in the population. And it's kind of like a boiling cauldron of trouble. And it's been brewing for a while, and it just exploded in the regime's face. And there's really no going back from what I'm seeing, not just, you know, photos of the supreme leader and the religious figures being burned down, but the security apparatus, the IRGC, the besiege, they're all being attacked by these protesters. And these protesters are unarmed. They don't even have weapons. That's how much anger and fury they have.
The numbers, isn't it, Carmel? I think if you get thousands upon thousands of people, it doesn't matter whether you're armed or not. It's the numbers that make the difference. You know, okay, the other side can have guns and that, but if you're in depth and strength, yes, you might lose people, but the strength in the people, the young people, if they've had enough of being oppressed by these people who are just bettering for themselves and not for the country, especially for the young people. Am I right in my direction there, would you say, Carmel?
Pardon me, what was the question?
Well, no, what he was saying, Carmel, was he was asking about, is he right in his belief that it is the, it really almost doesn't matter that the security forces have weapons, because this revolution is being led by sheer numbers of people with just their bare hands?
That is a correct assessment. But also I think the vast majority of the population have come to the realization that this is a failed regime. They have failed in every aspect. Their lives are no better. They gave the quote-unquote reformists an opportunity to fix things, and things have just gotten worse. And they've reached the final realization that the only way that things can change if the Ayatollahs, the Mullahs, are kicked out, and they're willing to put their lives in risk. An interesting statistic that many folks in the West, the Western media, overlook is the fact that 70% of Iran's 80 million population are young people under the age of 40. Now, you tell me, you can add up the numbers. How can this regime or any totalitarian regime keep such a significant population of young people who are exposed to social media, they're exposed to what's going on in the outside world, repressed? They're seeing folks in the Middle East, in the West, in America, that are just the same age as them, just as smart as them, and enjoying freedom, great opportunities, jobs, having families, living peaceful lives, while their suffering, and they've just had enough of it. And they're, by sheer number, I don't think that there's any future left for this regime. They may hold on for a while just through brutal force, but they've lost the hearts and minds of the average people. And it doesn't look good for the regime. When the regime will collapse, God only knows.
Yeah, I was just thinking, what is the next step? Are you hearing that they are gradually stepping it up, putting pressure on the mullahs and that, and the imams, you know, sort of gradually you're finding that their establishment, the regime's establishment is breaking down? Have you heard this at all, Kamel?
We are starting to hear and see a breakdown of the situation for the regime through various strikes, national general strikes through various businesses and industries in the country. That could very easily bring the regime to on the verge of collapse or even collapse, because, for example, if you don't have the petroleum industry or the natural gas industry that produces a lot of the crude oil or the natural gas for the regime, that, you know, where they sell it overseas, if there's no gas being produced, there's no way for revenue to come into the regime's coffers. And it's pretty much cripples the government. At the same time, we're seeing a lot of individuals that are well-known, celebrities, figures in sports throughout Iran that are stepping up. Before, you know, they really didn't get into politics for fear of the regime. But they're stepping up and saying, we've had enough of this. This is outrageous. Why is the regime killing these individual innocent young people and other protesters for no reason? So you're seeing a breakdown of support for the regime from the middle class, from influential figures. And lately, I would say in the last several days, a few people associated with the military, lower-level folks, have stepped up and denounced the regime and said, if you continue killing these people, repressing them, arresting them, we're going to side on, we're going to go on the side of the people. And they've courageously, you know, denounced the regime and threatened to join the protesters. So there is definitely a move toward the breakdown of the situation for the regime in the country.
Well, that's powerful stuff there, Kamel. Thank you. Thank you for that. I would like to also ask you, Kamel, if we do get people listening to us from all over, especially some of our Western medias might be listening in, what message would you like to give them? Instead of sitting quiet, sitting in the background, what should they do? Any advice for them to step up and do something to help the people?
Well, folks in the U.S. and the Western countries need to do what the protesters are asking them. Step up, stand up, voice support for the protesters. Go to social media, voice your support for the people of Iran that are demanding the overthrow of the regime and freedom and democracy and equality. At the same time, they're asking us in the West, individuals, call your member of Congress, call your member of Parliament, call your elected officials, email them, tell them to support the people of Iran and stop engaging diplomatically and economically with this regime that's killing these innocent people. Why are the European Union countries still trading with Iran? Why haven't they expelled the diplomatic force of the Iranian regime? In Europe, we're only seeing the Albanian government that basically ousted the Iranian regime's diplomatic corps What about the rest of Europe? They haven't stepped up. Shamefully, the Biden administration continues the insane Iran deal negotiations. People in Iran are saying this is outrageous. Why are these Western governments negotiating with our oppressors? And we're asking people in Europe and America, Australia, the free world, to isolate the regime and stand with the people and take measures diplomatically and economically to really isolate the regime for its behavior.
Well said, Carmelo. I'd like to pass it back to Dave. I think Dave was going to come in and say something there. But well said what you've been clarifying on there, Karma. But I'd like back to you, Dave.
All right. Well, this reminds me a lot, Carmel, of what happened during the Obama administration when a young lady named Netta was killed. I'm sure you remember that. And the Obama administration basically did nothing. In fact, they entered into deals with Iran. In fact, they gave Iran a giant pallet full of cash. And it looks like the Biden cabal is basically doing the same thing. And this is pure insanity. Going into our 2022 midterm elections, I think that, frankly, this should be an issue. Are we going to deal with these kinds of terrorists who are out there killing young people? We put a picture of the young lady who died in police custody, and she died just because she didn't have her hijab on correctly. And it's this kind of oppressiveness that these extremists bring in that people should be fighting against, especially when you see that it's the young people in the UK in Iran that are doing this, that are involved in this revolution. And they've been involved in it for some time. I mean, you told us the last time that we spoke that Iran can't even afford to pay its own oil field workers anymore. So how much of an onus do you think it is on the Western world? And this, of course, as you say, includes Europe and includes the United States. How much of an onus would you say that it is now, especially given the fact that the people in Iran are turning up the heat on that regime?
There's a huge onus on the U.S. and the Europeans and the rest of the free world for what's going on in Iran. For years, whether it's the Obama administration or the Clinton administration or the current Biden administration, they've been trying to appease the Ayatollahs through negotiations, through free money, through sanctions relief. And what's been the response? Nothing but continued terrorism in the world. Nothing but continued war and violence in the Middle East. And even more crackdowns on individuals that are just asking for basic freedoms. I think it's the height of hypocrisy from the Biden administration that came to power in January of 2021. They were talking about LGBT rights and human rights throughout the world. They were going to champion human rights. They were going to champion LGBT rights. They flew up the LGBT rainbow flag in various embassies throughout the world, U.S. embassies throughout the world. But yet we hear crickets, nothing from the U.S. State Department, from the Biden administration when it comes to the Iranian regime's human rights violations, from the Iranian regime's brutality against LGBT and the gay community in Iran. It's hypocrisy. It's outrageous. And I tell folks everywhere, the situation with Iran is important twofold. One, because it's a national security issue, not just for Europe, but America. This is a regime that for 43 years has been chanting death to America, death to Israel, and to a lesser extent, death to England. They're on the verge of having nuclear weapons. They are, definitely have the ballistic missile and the rocket technology to develop, to deliver potential nuclear weapons. Why on earth are we not pressing on this regime diplomatically, economically? Why are we negotiating with them? And the second issue is human rights, basic freedoms. The West and the United States always talks about championing democracy and human rights and freedoms for people. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue, a conservative or liberal issue. This is an issue of humanity and human rights. So whatever side of the political field you're on, you should be supporting the people of Iran and their quest for freedom. A free Iran means you don't have to give these terrorists supporting Ayatollahs billions in free cash. If the people of Iran overthrow this regime, you better believe they're going to dismantle this insane nuclear weapons capability that the regime has been building up and join the free world. The people of Iran have no desire for war with the rest of the world.
To join the free world, to be free people, free from oppression. You know, freedom's worth fighting for, freedom's worth dying for, and I think you already said that previously, is that they're fighting and they're dying for their freedoms that they want so dearly. That's you, Carmel.
Now, well, Carmel, if I may, I want to throw a figure out there, and this is for our American listeners, and you can certainly comment on it if you would. It has been estimated that if a nuclear EMP attack occurred over the middle of the United States of America, that the resulting disruption in civilization would produce a 90% death rate in the population of the United States. And you've already pointed out that Iran is and has been for decades pursuing nuclear weapons. Is there any doubt in your mind that if Iran has the capability to build and launch an ICBM, that they would not do that and launch that towards the center of the United States of America and just pop off an EMP attack and do similar things to the UK and to European countries and places of that nature just to forward the regime's terrorist agenda?
I don't think this regime would have any problem with that. Unfortunately, they are religiously driven by this sick religious extremist Islamic ideology of martyrdom, and thinking that they can bring about their Shiite Islamic Messiah by bringing on a sort of Armageddon. So based on the regime's long religious ideology and political philosophy, and the fact that they've clearly been saying for more than 40 years, death to America. I have, you know, no hesitation. I think there's no hesitation by the regime to carry out that will that they have. It's very frightening. It's very scary. But what's even more scary is we don't have Western leaders that are taking them seriously for their, you know, for their word. And they still think they can appease this evil. As we saw in World War II and other conflicts, when you appease evil, nothing but bad occurs. and humanity suffers. And when you get into the whole nuclear weapons situation, it is alarmingly frightening.
Nightmare scenario, I would call it as well, Carmel. Yeah, that's the whole situation. You know, it's like appeasing the crocodile, isn't it? One day he's going to turn around, he's going to eat you. You know what I mean? It's like that. It doesn't matter how you appease, how much money you pour into them. If they want to destroy, you know, the rest of the world, they don't care because they want to be martyrs. They want to go down as attacking the United States, attacking Israel, attacking the UK and the westernised worlds, because they hate the Western world, don't they, Carmel?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and they've told us many times. It's in the Iranian regime's constitution to spread their form of Islamic jihad to the rest of the world and create a radical Islamic caliphate. People were frightened of ISIS. The Iranian regime is no different than ISIS. It's just a Shiite version, an extreme Shiite Islamic version of ISIS. You know, they're carrying out their goals. You see it in what they're doing in Lebanon, in Syria, in Yemen, in Gaza. They're on this quest for world domination, for a lack of a better word. And the Western leaders, U.S., to wake up.
What do you think the chances are? You know, I'm sorry to take your mic. I just want to pose this question to you. With the situation that's so volatile the way it is at the moment in Iran, because, as you said, it's spreading right the way across Iran, is there a possibility that the imams and the mullahs could possibly turn their own nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction against their own people? Is that a wild nightmare scenario? Possibilities come out?
I don't know. I honestly don't know if they would. But this regime in the past has not hesitated to slaughter its own people. In 2019, with the protests, the regime, it was reported that the regime killed at least 1,500 people. And,
wow.
And that's a conservative, you know, that's a very small conservative number. The estimates are even higher. But officially, through the news reports, it's been 1,500. Something that folks in the West and the U.S. don't realize is the Ayatollahs and their thugs, the IRGC and their security apparatus, are brutal. I do not like to make comparisons, but there's something very similar to the Nazi Gestapo. They not only go after protesters and people that oppose the regime, but they go after their families. They imprison their family members, and they torture and they kill their family members. So that invokes an even greater violence. And just in the last 2 weeks, with the current uprisings and revolution, we're seeing the regime using live bullets and mowing people down and killing protesters without any hesitation. So it would not surprise me if the regime used extreme measures to stay in power. They've done it in the past. They continue to do it. And they will not go quietly into that good night, for a lack of a better description. They will hold on with all their might.
I agree with that, and I do like your sentiment there, but they will not go quietly into the night. And that's so true. Normally these regimes die screaming and shouting and throwing as much thought around as possible, and that's what we'll probably see with them. Although, if there is a three-pronged attack, and they're taking away certain things of the Ayatollahs and that, and gradually weaken them there. You could find different bases of theirs falling into disarray. That could be a good sign. So I would say to the people that the revolution is to push on. Push on. Do not be afraid. Do not be scared. Push on. Your freedom and your children's freedom is so important, and so is yours as well. So push on. Be brave. I'd like to pass it back to Dave. I just want to say that because my mind is full of these brave people that are standing up against all that they can throw against them, and these people and the poor ladies that's died during this. I didn't realise it was such a number that you just mentioned a little while ago, Carmel, but thank you for giving those numbers. It's just blows your mind away, doesn't it? But let me pass it back to Dave. Dave, back to you. I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it, what's going on?
Yeah, it is. Carmel, now you mentioned the influence that the Iranian terror, well, you might call it terror factory or a terror regime or terror agenda has in the Middle East, Syria, places of that nature. But it's not just there. You can confirm, I think, that their reach also goes into Africa and, yes, into South America as well. Am I not correct?
Absolutely. They had a plan to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in America several years ago. They've threatened to kidnap a Iranian-American journalist by the name of Masih Alinejad. They are involved in a lot of nefarious activities throughout the world, Africa, South America, Asia, North America, Latin America. They've got their hands and fingerprints everywhere.
Okay. Well, Carmel, we would very much appreciate it if, when further things develop, you get hold of me via email, and you're always welcome to come back on the show and keep us updated on this, because this, as you say, it's been going on for some time, and it's not going to stop. I have a feeling that there may well be a change in regime, but it's going to cost heavily. And I would very much appreciate it if you would, come back and talk to us when you have more details and things of that nature. You've been fantastic today. And my question to you is, would you like to stay with us as we move on to other subjects? I know Jeff has to call back in. Because he's 2 minutes over. Would you like to stay with us as we move on to some other
stuff? I've got some family commitments, Dave. I've got to head out.
Okay.
But I'll be more than happy to join you guys in the future. Anytime you'd like some insights about what's going on in Iran, it would be my pleasure. The one message I think that's important for Americans and the rest of the free world to know about the people of Iran is they're really fantastic, freedom-loving human beings. And I say this as an Iranian-American. You will not meet a people more hospitable, more loving, more kind, more tolerant than the people of Iran. Unfortunately, they're being held hostage, and they've been held hostage for 43 years by a demonic totalitarian regime. We in the West need to step up and show them the love and show them the support and tell them you're not alone in your struggle for freedom. If we do that, you're going to see a dramatic spread of peace throughout the Middle East and that part of the world.
Beautiful.
That's terrific.
Mark Carmel, I couldn't have thought of anything better for you to say about the Persian people, the inner spirit of these people, very loving and caring. I've heard that before. And I thank you very much for your time tonight. And please come back and share with any other views you've got with whatever's going on, the revolution unfolding. Please come back and speak to us again soon, because it's been such an interesting conversation tonight. So thank you, Carmel. God bless
you for
all you do as well, sir. Back to you, Dave.
Appreciate you, Carmel, and when you come back, we might do some more talking about Israel and get a little bit of an update on the situation there, and see if they can get a Knesset together that can actually govern straight.
That'll be an interesting conversation for later, but no, definitely look forward to chatting with you guys about that as well.
God bless you, sir, and thank
you
for joining us today.
Carmel, speaking with us tonight. So with that, let me pass back, Dave. I've got a call in, Carmel. Absolutely fantastic call. God bless you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening, gentlemen.
Thanks very much.
And you have a good evening, too. You have a blessed evening, Carmel. We really appreciate you very much. And, guys, Jeff is going to call back in, and... once he does that, we're going to have a little bit of a treat, because tomorrow is my birthday, and that means that I get to play a song. That's right. It's a cute little song, and I think you guys will enjoy it. But just going to call back in, and when he does, we're going to open up some other subjects that we have. Frankly, guys, I've been working on stories and just been approving them and things of that nature. He's had his eye out too. We've got stuff, frankly, from last week and moving in, even starting today. We won't cover it all in this show, but we will definitely have the stuff in, and we will be talking about it. There'll be a lot of great stuff. But in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and hit this little song, and you guys can refresh your drinks and everything. This is going to be about 2 minutes. So check this out. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. Welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. I want to say something about Carmel Melamed before we move on to the next big thing here. A lot of people don't realize that Carmel and his family are Jewish. And I wanted to say that because the some people have the impression that everyone in the Middle East is a Muslim. Everyone in the Middle East follows Islam and all that kind of stuff. And it's just not true. You have people of every religious background in the Middle East, and that includes Iran. You have Jewish people there. You have Christians there. People other than just the Mohammedans. And if you want to talk about people whose rights are being violated, and we hear these political commercials and everything in our countries about how women's rights are being violated because they can't kill their babies, or LGBTQ equals MC squared rights are being violated because some trainee is being called sir rather than ma'am, or any of this other trash. We're hearing all those things, but we're not hearing about the rights of these people of other religions, and even people of the Islamic religion, that are being walked all over in these regimes like the one in Iran. And it takes people like Carmel Melamed and his family and friends, people like that, in to bring you guys the details that you need to become fully educated about this stuff. If you listen to our first hour, you guys got an earful and an education on what's going on in Iran. And yes, we're going to have Carmel back, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Israel too, because that as well is important to world security. Jeff, do you have anything to say, and is there anything out of the chat before we move on?
Well, as I say, it was such an interesting guest to have on the show tonight with what's been going on in Iran, because unfortunately the West doesn't talk too much about it, especially our mainstream media, as you know, Dave. And it's only independent shows like ourselves that are actually speaking about and having people on who knows exactly what's going on the ground, and have got social interactions with people that living in Iran, so they know what's going on. That is why we like having Mr. Carmel Mendelsohn on the show, because he's got he's got people on the ground who knows exactly what's going on. So that's what I'm saying. You get the truth. When we have Carmel on, you know you're getting the truth. There's people there who knows exactly what's going on. They can feel what's happening around them. They can see people being hurt, and they can see, you're hearing now the rumblings of the regime starting to crumble, to break at the edges. And that's what we was sharing during the show with Carmel. Interesting, great conversation. I say, what a great gentleman to have one of our first guests back on the show for this evening, Dave. Back to you, mate.
All right, and you know, part of the reason why I played that song was because it's called Ahead of the Wave by the non-commissioned officers. And yes, we're going to be discussing, and we always do discuss what's going on, the main news, things that are happening immediately. We're going to always discuss those things, but we're going to dig deeper here. We're going to get ahead of the wave. You're going to hear things here, as you hear things on TECN.TV, that you're not going to hear other places. And that means that you're going to be plugged into the news before CNN, the BBC, any of these other big bug, self-important news outlets even begin talking about it. Or news that they won't talk about at all because it doesn't fit their agendas. But here, you've got the advantage. And Jeff, do we have anything out of the chat before we move into this next story?
No, it's the gentleman is sitting there. I think he quite enjoyed the part of the show with Carmel on there as well. No, just sitting there quiet at the moment. Thank you, mate.
All right. Well, okay, guys. Now, the show is called Clashes and Bashers, and obviously The first hour we talked about Iran, and there are a lot of clashes going on there now with what you've now heard is not a not an uprising, but a full-blown revolution. And there are clashes going on also in the UK. And this one, we'll talk a little bit about this one after we're done with the story. We're going to go ahead and run this one, though. This will be just about 3 minutes long. And check this one out, guys. You're listening to the English Fencing Radio Show.
Allahu Akbar versus Jai Shri Ram - UK riots between Muslims and Hindus spreading by Jack Montgomery on September 23, 2022. Riots between Muslims and Hindus in Britain have spread from Leicester to Smethwick and may spread all over Britain, community leaders warn. A mob of over 200 Muslims shouting Allah Akbar gathered outside the Durgabhawan Temple in Smethwick, a post-industrial town in the West Midlands, on Tuesday night, with mob members trying to scale its perimeter fence before scrapping with intervening police officers, according to reports. The violence, which saw police pelted with fireworks and other missiles, was ostensibly triggered by word that the temple had invited Sadhvi Ridhambara, an Indian described by the press as a Hindu nationalist, to deliver a sermon. The incident follows now long-running violence in Leicester, in the East Midlands, between Muslims and Hindus, initially linked to an India versus Pakistan cricket match, which at one point saw a member of a Muslim mob vandalize a Hindu temple in front of the police. Now, community leaders and residents are warning that the violence could well spread all across Britain, wherever there are South Asian communities, which functionally is almost everywhere. One Leicester resident, named as Vinod by The Telegraph, said that his disorder will continue to spread and blame social media for playing a big part in escalating the situation. People are looking at creating disarray between communities, not just in Leicester but across all of the UK, he alleged. We've been informed that there's going to be something similar in Nottingham and Coventry. It's well planned with a narrative of anti-Islam and anti-Hindu sentiment, and it's the actions of a few fanatics who are trying to get a reaction. Dozens of arrests have been made in Leicester and Smethwick already, for offenses ranging from affray and making threats to kill to possession of knives and firearms. Some conservative commentators have said the communal violence between Muslims and Hindus, marked by disputes over the political situation in far-off countries and foreign cries of Allahu Akbar and Jai Shri Ram, which roughly translate to, Our God is Greater, and Victory to Lord Rama, respectively, highlight the downside impacts of mass migration and multiculturalism on Western society, and indicate that diversity may not necessarily be a strength. We have to stop importing foreign drama, urged Calvin Robinson, an Anglican deacon and GB News presenter who is himself of mixed-race heritage. Social media isn't to blame. The problem is insufficient integration and mass immigration, he said. Follow Jack Montgomery on Twitter, at Jack Montgomery. Follow Breitbart London on Facebook, Breitbart London.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, your views.
Well, you know, it's nothing unusual for the Muslims to have a go at the Hindus, because they've been doing it for centuries. There's been so much bloodshed and Sikhs. The Muslims have always hated on the Sikhs, especially, and the Hindus. It's common knowledge. For century after century, the bloodshed has been spilt because they absolutely hate other faiths. They hate us, Dave, you know. I mean, the Muslims hate us. They hate us all because we're not Muslim. And that's the reason why they hate on the Hindus. That's why they hate on the Sikhs, because none of them are their faith. And that's the way it will always be until we had politicians who grow a backbone. That'd be the day. That'd be the day. And do something positive. But that, sadly, is not happening. So these acts of random violence that is spreading across the country will continue until you see the army get brought in or something like that, because that's how these things for him to go about and see how it happens. And then it becomes uncontrollable. And then you have all sorts of martial law brought in. And so, you know, who can say how this is going to go, Dave? You know, but this has been going for centuries. It's nothing new. Nothing new, as you know, Dave, and our listeners know, that this has been going on since they was actually, the cult of death was born. Was that 1400 years, 1400 years ago? That's you, Dave.
Well, basically, Islam can't stand anything that's not Islamic, and that's what their followers do, and it's very interesting. And Jeff, you can, you know, I'll welcome your comments on this, these observations I make. When it comes to Hindus and members, people who have other faiths, as long as people leave Hindus alone and let them do their thing, then they leave everyone else alone. On the whole, that's the way it seems to be. But that's not good enough for Mohammedans. That's not good enough for Mohammedans. Mohammedans have to have it all. You just heard in our first hour with Carmel Melamed talking about how the Shiite regime in Iran is dedicated to the destruction of everything that is not Islamic, and that even includes Sunni Islamic. They want their flavor of Islam, and nothing else will do. And they'll go to every length that they possibly can to get that. That's the difference, really, between the Mohammedans and Hindus. There really seems to be no problem with Hindus, but the problem really seems to be with the Mohammedans. Am I over the target with that, Jeff?
Yes, but on day, as I say, the Hindus and probably most of us have known Hindus in our lives. These are inoffensive people. They don't put up on anybody. They're not oppressive like we find that Muslims can be. Nice people go about their life, go about their families and business as they do. Just normal type of people. So I've never had any problems. Nor has millions of people. Unfortunately, the ones that do have a problem is the cultists of death. They've always had a problem with other faiths out there, sadly. That is the reflection of the cult of death. Back to you, Dave.
All right, yeah. And that does seem to be the way it is. And I think, Jeff, that your police over there are going to have an interesting problem because they love to go after people who actually defend the UK and the people of the UK. They love to do that, but these are Hindus, and I'm not too sure, even though they do bow a lot to Islam, I'm not too sure that they're going to want to go after the Hindus, because the Hindus aren't for the most part, let us say, Anglo-Saxon people, and they're going to have a little bit of a problem trying to dance through that minefield. So I think your police are going to have a bit of an issue there. Is there anything out of the chat before we move on to the next thing?
No, it's quiet. I think the gentlemen are enjoying what we've put on the plate tonight for them. So I hope you're enjoying the show, guys. Like we've enjoyed being back and seeing you two guys. So thank you, Dave.
All right. Well, next, we've been away for a month, and of course, in that time, Queen Elizabeth passed, and we both wanted to take a moment, and we wanted to acknowledge her leadership and her stewardship of putting the best foot forward of the UK for as many years as she did. And Jeff, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, brother.
Yeah, well, as I say, the Queen was a great Queen. She led from the front. She was a land girl during the Second World War. She helped up beside other people during them times. So she was she served the country well, and she had a long reign, the longest reign, I think, in our history. And I might be wrong, but so I hear that she was the longest reigning monarch of our times. So, you know, I mean, she was looking frail, and it's like time, when time catches up, it doesn't matter about you trying to sidestep it, but sadly, it comes to a time with us all. There's always a time that you've done your duty for your country and time to rest, and that's exactly how it was with Her Majesty. So onward and forward for her. Sadly, we probably won't see another queen ruling in our times for many, many decades, I would think. You know, if you look at the way that the throne is at the moment, we've got a dipstick, Charles III. Yeah, Charles III. then, you know, when he finally succeeds from the throne, then it's handed to William, and then goes full. Then it's going to be all boys for generations, I would say, Dave. So, but the Queen's reign, well, she reigned. I was born when she was still, when she was reigning, and she was born in 1926, and I think it was George that died, and I'm not sure what age she was. She was pretty young. She was beckoned home because she was being, you know, classed as the Queen. So, but it was a long reign, and God bless her for serving her country so well, and across the world, you know, she served the country so well. So, onward and forward. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Devin. And as an American, of course, you know, we don't have kings and queens and all of that. But what we do have occasionally are leaders in our country who actually care about the people of our nation and about our nation's principles and things of that nature. And Elizabeth cared about those things when it came to the UK, and she had a good relations with people like President Reagan. And you could tell that she had a lot of love for the best parts of the UK. In other words, the freedoms, the equality, the championing of real human rights for people in the UK. You could tell that she had a great love for her country and not this cynical, wordy pseudo patriotism that so many other leaders have. She was a rarity in world leaders, and that to me characterizes her reign, and she will be missed for that reason. And I've got a story here. And Jeff hasn't heard this one, but this one is another one out of Breitbart. It takes about 4 minutes because not everyone felt the same way about the Queen that Jeff does, and even that I do. So I'm going to go ahead and run this one, and then I'm going to get Jeff's comments. All right, you guys are listening to the English Defense League radio show.
UK Black Studies Professor, Queen Wanted to Be a Figurehead for White Supremacy, by Jack Montgomery on September 22, 2022. Britain's late Queen Elizabeth II wanted to be a figurehead for white supremacy and reap all the rewards, according to the country's inaugural Professor of Black Studies. Kehinde Andrews, who has branded even the publicly funded university which created his position institutionally racist, has carved out a niche for himself in Britain's public discourse as the go-to source for the mainstream media when it needs someone to label some aspect of Western and especially British culture or history. The British flag, the English flag, the song rule, Britannia, wartime Prime Minister Sir Winston Churchill, the Enlightenment, and so on, racist. The activist academic was perhaps never more energetic than in the days following the Queen's death, penning articles for the likes of NBC News, Novara Media, and Politico and appearing on broadcasters such as MSNBC to denounce the deceased 96-year-old as a symbol of colonialism, racism, and or white supremacy. Although we saw her a lot, I can't remember anything she ever did, so it's fair to say the Queen was a figurehead and symbol, said Andrews, rather cattily, in comments quoted by Birmingham Live, the major regional media outlet for the city hosting the university where he enjoys a sinecure. But then you think, what does that symbol represent? It represents white supremacy. It's a celebration of colonial nostalgia and empire, and she paraded stolen jewels, the academic went on. She decided she wanted to be a figurehead for white supremacy and reap all the rewards, so, of course, she's culpable, Andrews accused, citing in particular, as of many of the Queen's leftist detractors, the suppression of the Mau Mau rebels in Kenya during the very first years of her reign. Little mentioned by such commentators is the fact that the Mau Mau did not enjoy popular support in Kenya, and that they were not only the victims of abuses, usually by local black security forces, but also the perpetrators of horrendous atrocities, including hacking a white six-year-old, his parents, and a black farm worker to death with pangas and burning large numbers of black Kenyans who did not support them alive in their homes. Indeed, Jomo Kenyatta, the first Kenyan president after decolonization, publicly denounced the Mau Mau as a disease which had been eradicated and must never be remembered again in the 1960s. What is not in question is that what remained of the British Empire on the Queen's accession to the throne in 1952 was all but dismantled by the time she passed away, with there being no question that the remaining British overseas territories with permanent populations, such as Gibraltar and the Falklands, retain their British status by overwhelming popular assent. People forget she didn't have to do any of it. She could have abdicated the throne, gone her way and lived a happy life, Andrews argued. The Queen did not see it this way, however, having viewed her role as monarch as a divinely ordained and lifelong duty. I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong, the then Princess Elizabeth had told her people during a radio broadcast in 1947, aged just 21, a promise she would keep for over seven decades. Nevertheless, Andrews insisted that the death of Chris Kaba, a black trail rapper not long out of prison for firearms offenses who was shot by police in London after allegedly driving a car at them following a chase, should be way more to society than the Queen's death. Follow Jack Montgomery on Twitter, at Jack Montgomery. Follow Breitbart London on Facebook, Breitbart London.
And welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, I know you got a thing to
say. I don't know why. Okay, I really don't know why we pay any credence to these low-life scumbags who wants to vilify, a monarch who reigns so well. And it's all, talk about a chip on your shoulder. And it's the only way they can make a name for themselves is by vilifying our monarch. That's it. That's what they do. I don't really want to play any credit. I'm not going to lose my temper on him because he's not worth a toss, Dave. You know what I mean? I can't be bothered with those because you always have them trying to make a name for themselves. That's all it is, Dave. I'm going to say this, and I know I'm going to get flat, but I'm going to say it anyway. Well, I'm not taking a note to you, pal, because you are a waste of time. Back to you. Thank you, Dave.
All right, Jeff. Well, you know what? This Andrews character is what I call a race pimp. Okay?
Yeah.
What that means is he's a racist because he makes money and fame out of saying this is racist and that's racist and this person is racist and that person is racist, and he's got a job for saying this person is racist and that person is racist and blah, 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 which he shouldn't have had a job at all. Saying some of that stuff, because people like him just drive people apart. And for him to say,
I really didn't want to pay credence to what he had to say, because as far as I'm concerned, he just wanted to make a name himself and make a few extra bob on speaking out like he did, and he's just made himself look a total plum. People like me see right through it and know exactly what it's all about, and I don't really want to comment on what he said because he's a waste of space. Back to you, Dave.
Yeah, and let's comment on this Chris Caba that he was talking about, who tried to run over the police with a car and they shot him to death.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's a case of play stupid games, win stupid prizes. All right. Of course, the cops shot him to death. I mean, why would they not? This is the problem with race pimps like this Andrews character. They just go out and they stir up trouble, and they do it just to ingratiate themselves, get themselves some wealth and things of that nature. And yes, you're right, Jeff. No one should listen to them at all, and it is a sickness in our society that we actually give people like this any position at all, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to create and maintain societies where people live together in peace on terms of equality. But he doesn't want that, especially if that means that it's less money in his pocket.
I think you just summed it up. Just, that's it. It's all about greed and saying things that he knows that people like myself, people like you, Dave, and many of us, just want to disregard because it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. Why should you make people like him rich? Why make a plum like him rich? That's you, Dave.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. Why do that? And that's going to be the thing. We have to recognize people like this. That's the reason I ran the story.
Yes.
Really, was because people like this have to be named and shamed, and hopefully. There will come a time, and I think there will come a time, when when there will be new powers that be. And they will look at these people and they will say, you spread nothing but hate. You spread nothing but negativity. You don't add anything positive to anything. All right, so what we're going to do is just take away your little position here. But until then, it's up to shows like this to present what these people say and to vilify it as it's so richly deserved. Is there anything out of the chat regarding this, Jeff?
No. It's actually they're quite quiet tonight. I think they've enjoyed the show so far. But I think I surprised you, Dave, because I was going to fly at this guy. But I just thought about it as the story was unfolding, and I was listening. I think he wants me to go after him, and I thought, no, I'm not going to, because he's not worth it. Why should I rant and rave over a twat like him? Do you know what I mean? So he can say, oh, yeah, he talked about me on a radio show. Yeah. No, we said talk about you because you're a plum. Back to you, Doug.
Yeah, that's nice, yeah. All right, man. Well, folks, that's it. Believe it or not, for our first show back, and we've got lots and lots more, which we'll, some of which we'll get to next week. But Jeff, it's been a terrific show, and I want to thank Carmel.
It's just a bit of a blur tonight, wasn't it, Dave? It went so quick. I mean, Carmel was an absolutely perfect guest to have on for our comeback to the radio after our break. Absolutely fantastic. We had so much talking points. We all engaged in the great conversation. And, you know, it was such an interesting night tonight, Dave. Thank you very much, Dave, for you and Carmel sorting out so he could come on the show and explain exactly what we've been seeing, what they don't want us to see, but we know what's going on, by Carmel's observations and that. So, once again, Dave, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, Jeff, it's a team effort. And certainly, you know, I have you to thank for that. You know, as far as this goes, I mean, that, you know, it really does require a team effort to get this whole thing done. And you know, that's what it's all about. So, you know, we're doing our thing, and we're going to do our thing next week, and we're going to do that all the way up to our Christmas break, and. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to see, I was very glad to see Carmel Melamed join us, and I thank him, and of course, he'll be back with us, and of course, Biggie, very happy to see you back, and Duck Northwest Media, glad to have you back, and we'll be back next week, and Jeff, one of the things that I heard was the Jam. Got hold of me. You know, sent me another postcard, and they're in the Americas now. They're thinking about going to the Americas. Right now, they're in the Canary Islands. They're trying to ride whales and race them. I just can't understand these guys. Yeah, it's a bit different. Yeah. But you know the Alex and the Bandits are standing by. They got a little something special.
Yeah, try peanuts.
So,
keep ducking that peanuts, Dave.
Well, yeah, they're a little bit sprightly because you know it's been a while since. It's been a little while since they've been able to get up on the stage. So I think they're ready to give us something special. So Jeff, they'll be ready when you are.
I've got to say thank you, Doug. Thanks for the script tonight and the great slides as usual. And I've thoroughly enjoyed working tonight with you, Dave, and having a great guest with Carmel. And it's great to see Biggie in the chat and Duck Northwest Media. Good to see you, brother. Good to see the lads back. They knew the woman was going to come back and they was there. I just love the show tonight. Thank you, Dave. That's you. So if you're ready to play us out, and I'm seeing you still ducking those peanuts, yeah, get your frying pan out. Bat them away, mate. Bat them away. That's you, Dave.
All right. Yeah, I'm doing it. All right, guys. Get up there. Let's get it going.
Well, you've definitely got a revolution going on in Iran. So that's definitely happening. But thanks a lot, Alex, and the band is well done, as usual. And, of course, to my my right-hand man, Mr. Dave Milner. What a great show tonight, Dave. Thanks for everything you did tonight, mate. It was absolutely great. But we'll be back again next week, same time, same place, Bigfoot and Duck Northwest Media. Hope to see you two guys next week. So from Dave and myself, we're saying good night, God bless, from the English Defence League radio show. We will see you again next week. Have a great week. See you next Sunday. No, no, guys. No surrender.